Just to set the context, the RAI has 3,000 members, 2,700 are architects, 300 are technologists, and there are five architecture schools in the Republic of Ireland. The population in Ireland, in the Republic, is 4,670,000, roughly, and 21% of those are under 14. So the average age is 34.8 years. We have 535 practices and 82 branches, and 50% of our practices are in the micro bracket, including myself. That's 1 to 5 employees, including myself. And in a recent practice survey, about 50% of those practices predicted that their work levels would remain the same, which would be pretty low, and that about 15% or so said it would improve. So if we want to be very positive, that means things are getting better in general, but obviously you can look at it the other way. I just give those sort of figures because they were on Alan's briefing sheet for his equivalent organisation. Also, I think that you were saying, Alan, that you were interested in our action plan process. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But the tools that we have used in the Institute are the sort of strengths that we have. One of the biggest things that we have in our favour is we have a government policy on architecture, which we worked on fairly closely with the powers that be. We included a broad range of stakeholders and the rest of it, and that informed the process for the review of the RAI itself. I'll just to say, I spent the first few years, I've been on council for 6 years, and I spent the first good three of them voicing the concerns of small practice and, in particular, public procurement, the issue of the day. I'll just say the second government policy was launched by the Minister, by Minister John Gormley, who's Minister of the Environment, in 2009. It has an emphasis on quality in the built environment, and recognises that built environment profoundly affects the quality of our everyday lives, and seeks to promote awareness in brackets or promote the awareness and understanding of the contribution of good design to daily life and to the well-being of society as a whole, which is a brilliant start. As I said, it sets out to deliver quality within the built environment, and it's structured with 15 policy statements. And they're very long policy statements, but I'm just going to run through them. I've shortened them down to a couple of words each. The first one is research, the necessity for architectural expertise within public service. The second one is quality-friendly procurement. Then fostering architectural creativity and innovation through design competitions. Commitment to the historic built environment. Commitment to continuing education in the area of sustainable, high-quality built environment and architectural heritage. Creation and maintenance of sustainable communities and high-quality placemaking. Recognition of the value of existing built environment as a resource, promotion of awareness and the value of good architectural and environmental design, recognition of the cultural and artistic importance of architecture, encouragement of a wider understanding of architecture and the built environment at third level and further education, and education by example in terms of public building projects, and finally an implementation programme and the integration of architectural design and planning frameworks. These all have actions associated with them, and these are very good tools for us to use. It is the interesting thing about architects is that we are everywhere. You know, we're in, because of our training, we tend to sort of arrive in various places. So within our government, we have several architects in quite useful locations, and also because I suppose we're a small entity, this can prove extremely useful. And we have a Minister for Education who's a former architect, which is very useful at the moment, because we are channeling a lot of problems we have with procurement through that department, in the hope that we will get significant change in the next few years. We've been working on that for many years, as I'm sure the frustration levels are the same as they were for Willie Watt in Dundee. And as I was saying, there's 45 actions outlined, and I only have a short time here, so I won't list them all out. I'll just start with the most immediate, which is the procurement of buildings. We've done a lot of work in the area because current practices are not working for us. And basically, if they're not working for architects, they're not really working for anybody else. We're struggling to marry the government policy and architects' objective of having architecture quality as the cornerstone of national policy on the built environment with their procurement practices, which still weight cost over quality no matter how you look at it, and still appear to exclude small or young practices. Sorry, it's jumped on me. Where have I gone? Sorry, 2 seconds. It's jumped around. Ugh, can't read it now. So where was I on that? Sorry. So anyway, so I was just saying that the small young practices are not included. So that denies, obviously, the diversity of talent available in Irish architecture to public architecture. I mean, we could survive in the private sector. A lot of small practices do a lot of extensions and small houses and get work that way. But, however, there is a lot of talent, and that is we're being robbed of it, basically, in the public realm because we're not given the opportunities. So, basically, if we adopted the actions on public procurement under the GPA, it would result in better buildings and a greater quality of life and the added value of economically, socially and environmentally quality of life. Sorry. We would welcome also and look forward to more widespread use of architectural competitions. At the moment, we have the first one from the Department of Education in the south, which has caused great excitement, and there will be a series of those. It is the cheapest method of procurement, and although it's the cheapest for the client, but at the same time, obviously, architects put a lot of effort into these competitions, and there is a method on this one where we will where they have decided that the people who are shortlisted will also get commissions. So it's kind of making a framework through architectural quality rather than going through the price route, and the fees are already established, so it's working fairly well. Hopefully, it's a good policy to start with. We'd like to say also that under Action 11, the RII are working with government departments in an effort to achieve exemplary and sustainable practice in the architectural commissioning of works and services, and working on a procurement method ourselves, which hopefully will advance the government policy and architecture's quality objectives. Now, we're putting it together because we can talk all we like to the Department of Finance, and we can suggest changes and tell them it's unfair and point at the directive, the European directive, which isn't actually that bad. It's not as bad as the system we have. But they're not going to fix it because they don't understand the problems. We've got to give them the solution. So that is how we're approaching it. One of the keys, the policy also highlights the education of architects, of continuing education, but also of the public, and with the intention of establishing a comprehensive approach to promoting awareness of the value of good architecture and environmental design. We cannot create quality architecture unless there is a demand for it, and this can only happen through engagement and education of the public. So that's another prong. People ask... the demand is created and by people who know what they're asking for. So we're trying to educate them on that level as well. It's another approach. One of the keys to quality architecture is giving the client what they want. The challenge is establishing what they want. As David was saying, a good brief makes a good building. And even a more sophisticated demand in the property market, which values location, siting and sustainable construction, standards would reduce the supply of poorly designed buildings in unsustainable locations, which impose costs on their users and society at large for many years after the buildings are completed, as we know now, probably as we've always known. And if it is to be a market-driven approach, we have to educate the market. At around the time of this government policy was being put together, We did a comprehensive review of the RAI itself as an institution and the profession as a whole, just to review the strengths and weaknesses and to assess the challenges and scenarios for the future, pretty much along the lines of Simon's exercise, and only on a much smaller scale. We wanted some scenarios for the future of architecture and practice of architecture in the context of what we were then experiencing, or what you're now experiencing, is the contraction of the construction sector. Ireland's medium to long-term economic forecasts, which are obviously not great, and the publication of the government policy and architecture. And also we had then the implementation of the Building Control Act, which means that we now have registered architects from 2009. So this whole process took 12 months and took the form of regular nationwide seminars to discuss current issues and to define a range of objectives and actions for survival, renewal and recovery. And at the end of it, I was sick of the sight of fat markers and post-its and flip charts, I can tell you. But the review process included public and private sector, salaried architects, government and public officials, clients, stakeholders and RAI committee members. So what we came through during the process in 2009 was that what came through during the process of 2009 was the architects were in a very difficult place, but we were positive about contributing to the path to recovery and how we might bring a unique perspective to any discussion about that recovery process. It was felt that the less work that we had would not mean less analysis and fewer ideas, but that we now had time to reflect after a very busy time, and we could learn from failures and successes of the past, and we could feed into positive initiatives for the future. There was some criticism of how architects have let areas of skill and expertise... I should really have printed this out. This is ridiculous. Go to other sectors. Skills and expertise. They went to other sectors, as we know, and has been referred to earlier on today. And also a huge concern about the impact of thoughtless, low-fee culture that we're experiencing, and the effect of that on quality and design, and a sense that architects needed to be proactive in developing new business models and a more rounded public profile. I mean, I think all of these things have actually been said. I think pretty much we're all on the same page to a greater extent. In general, it was thought that new registration of architects was a positive thing. The strategic review examined the capacity of the profession to adapt and set out a range of objectives and actions for survival, renewal and recovery so that we can emerge from the recession in a stronger and better position as a national body for promotion, regulation and support of architecture in Ireland. You know, we're really hoping that we will come out of this in the end, sooner rather than later. And that's the only thing that can keep us sort of going, is that in the end it will be better and we will come out of it in a better way. Our resulting action plan had 11 objectives and attendant actions. And I'm going to read this short thing, but it was to promote the quality and value of design, to promote the importance of first-class infrastructure, high-quality built environment, champion the theory and practice of sustainable development. Pretty much they coincided with the government policy and architecture objectives, but we have our own actions to tie in with that. I've got a copy here for you, Alan, if you want it. I'll be continuing to use this action plan as a roadmap for continuity. But we will be reviewing it this year just to make sure we're still on the road to a certain extent. Now, I learned a lot during that sometimes painful process about the depth and breadth and diversity within the profession and about how we regard ourselves. As a profession, we have a very strong work ethic, and part of our professional ethos stresses idealism, optimism and a certain heroic self-image. I think that how architects have been educated is slightly problematic. We allow ourselves to ignore issues that are perceived to get in the way of architecture with a big A, such as sustainability and accessibility, rather than seeing them as opportunities. We also tend to ignore financial realities, not in terms of building contracts or in terms of our clients' money, but generally within our practices. And we've an unrealistic view of what we can do. And I think it's reflected in this race to the bottom with fee levels. In terms of a future, the REI is the registration body, and it is pivotal to the profession and to the practice of architecture. It needs to be as strong as possible to act as an advocate and protector of architecture. That's architecture with a capital A. And to do this, we need the support of the entire profession, so communication is more important than ever. a lot of good work started by my predecessors and by council members and members of the various committees will continue, but a still greater effort is required to acquaint the members and the public with what is happening so that we can strengthen the REI's hand and relevance. Communication is a two-way process. We have to communicate with members and public and the public, and we also have to listen. I participated at one of these schools colloquium last year. We were divided up into that thing with 10, with big work group tables of 10 people, all mixed, some architects, some government people, some engineers, everybody who's involved, all the stakeholders. And I was at a table with a particular government TD, fairly famous for driving down the steps on her first day. She missed me, it was very funny. And she's an ex-principal of a large girls' school. And she said, I don't know if she forgot where she was or something, but she said that I was floored. She said that architects were a waste of money and that she hated the word consultant because it meant unnecessary expense. And I thought this, after I, you know, cooled down a bit, I realised that this is our problem. There is a perception problem, and it's fairly big. We're seen by the general public as a little remote, as a luxury associated with spending big money. And I like to make that comparison with the legal and medical professions, both better paid than us. They have a two-tier profession with specialists and general practitioners. The GP and the solicitor are necessary parts of every community. They're considered essential, but we're not. And why not? We have to get to the point where Joe Public will approach the architect for advice first rather than the builder, engineer or surveyor. So for us in the REI to get to that point, we must encourage the support of our GP role. We know that good design makes healthier communities and we must get that message across. In this time, when there is very little work, we have an opportunity to encourage architects to become embedded in communities culturally and politically. We have to encourage architects to have opinions on the built environment and be willing to express them. We cannot lead if we do not have a view or be able to express a vision or even simply to show that we have the expertise. It's very important that we do not neglect the culture of architecture in these lean times. We must make ourselves the voice of the built environment. The business of architecture is utterly dependent on the strength of the culture of architecture. And equally important to the future of the profession are the younger members and graduates. I mean, we've seen mass exodus of our graduates and younger members and those not strapped to the country with a mortgage. I'd be gone myself if I could, but I have a mortgage. And equally importantly to the future of the profession, the usual routes for these younger members and graduates are is more and more difficult. And so many of them are actually setting up from college directly or leaving. And we have to engage meaningfully with them. Also, the usual knowledge exchange between senior members and younger members is not happening, so that wisdom is being lost. So we have a group called the Architecture Association of Ireland, which generally is the younger members, and they've put forward a few ideas about how to bridge that gap, which we're working on. It's called table crits, or it's where they come in with their projects and senior members come in. It's kind of a little... It's like we have this thing called Open House, I don't know if you have it, or Simon Open Door, where you could come in with you pay an architect for charity, like €70 or something, and you can show them your problems and they give you an hour's worth of advice or half an hour's worth of advice. That's the kind of model that they're using for this, and it's a situation where nothing's written down either, so there's no lawyers going to become involved in it, hopefully. Also, we have another very nice arrangement called the Dublin Forum, and there are a number of these groups. There's a casual group of young architects, mostly younger, but not exclusively, and they give casual support to each other and have kind of a knowledge community, and that is something that we are encouraging, that type of interaction, trying to make a more collegiate atmosphere, because we do tend to be a little bit more careful about our information. Also, encourage a much more self-reliant culture and take back the areas of expertise, hopefully, because through that process of the review, I realised that we have, like, barristers that are architects, and we have, we've an architect everywhere, pretty much. And if we knew that ourselves, then we could always go to the architect who is the expert rather than go to the other experts. And I think that would would encourage these skills to be kept within us and make a more collegiate thing, so that we have more pride in ourselves as a grouping, a much more collegiate thing. So our increasing diaspora, we need to encourage and support a network of colleagues abroad. There are some initiatives proposed for that, technological ones, which we will be working on. So I suppose my call to arms as president of the RAI to our council and members is that the profession must support each other and have courage of our convictions to go out and take responsibility for the built environment. I mean, you only get paid when you take responsibility for things. Not because we're entitled to, but because it needs us and our skills and abilities, and in particular, our training and joined-up thinking to make this world a better place, or the built world a better place. And I see my role as president is to communicate and facilitate the interests of this council and profession in the next 2 years. That's my piece. I will have to get a slideshow to go with this, so it will help with flow. But thank you for bearing with me through that. Thanks.